Hey, everybody. This is FinOps Fridays, our podcast hosted by Aptio and IBM, where we just try to talk FinOps. We try to get industry experts to share their wisdom, advice, experience, and also have a good time. Video stream live on LinkedIn, post to YouTube, and the audio is a little bit longer, and you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information, head over to Aptio.com. But for now, let's dive right into the podcast. Thanks for listening.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of FinOps Fridays. My name is Hunter Willis, and I've got Ryan Nix with us. And Ryan is a Principal Partner Solutions Architect for IBM with AWS. Ryan, welcome to FinOps Friday. It's a pleasure to have you here. Why don't you do a quick introduction and tell us a little more about yourself?
Ah, great to be here. Have worn many, many, many hats over the years. Last decade or so, I've been working with Amazon Web Services, recently focused on large-scale enterprise customers migrating workloads to AWS, a lot of app modernization, business modernization processes, and on the partner side of the fence now, so working with some of those large-scale partners facilitating those same customers. So working with VMware, Red Hat, IBM, and it's a fun space to be in.
That's great. Yep. And we've had a lot of great conversations. I've worked with you on some projects in the past as well, and I thought you would be a perfect person to have on FinOps Fridays because of all of the implementations you've seen and kind of the pitfalls you've seen customers make and different organizations make, as well as, you know, help them avoid those, obviously, as they're going into AWS and multi-cloud environments. Ryan, so the first question I want to ask you to just kind of dive into this, right, is talk to us about maybe just starting big, right? The biggest challenges you see with organizations planning for costs in the cloud as they're going into a migration scenario, right? Can you like lay out what that looks like and the considerations that you help customers walk through?
I'm so glad you ring-fenced that into cost, because when you were going through the initial parts of that question, I was like, God, there's so many. Right.
Talk to me about the security, organization, the exactly.
Patch management's top of everybody's minds right now.
Right. So, it's a pamphlet that says, so you're starting a four-year migration. What is that going to – yeah. Give me the considerations.
I think the cost element is something that is, for many customers, an afterthought. If you look at and probably when we did the introduction, we had a lot of people wondering, why the hell do we have a guy who does migrations talking on FinOps Fridays? Most of the migrations I see to AWS over the last, say, 11 years have been focused around an idea of let's get into AWS or get into the cloud as quickly as possible, then we can take advantage of the things on the cloud to facilitate whatever my next step is, whether that's a business modernization strategy. And the byproduct of that thinking is many people have a very rough-edged approach of let's take everything in its current state, let's just lift and shift things into the cloud, and costs, cost optimizations, how do I tweak the knobs and dials, become a secondary thought. They become something of I'll neaten things up once I'm there. And if you go back to like 2013, 2014, there was that fantastic video for how BuzzFeed did their migration from, you know, their data centers during a tropical cyclone, and there was flooding and chaos and confusion, and they got into the cloud and they got back up and running in a couple of hours, and then they made things better. People still think that way. And the spiked pit or the challenge with that is it then relies on you to get into the cloud and then utilize things like AWS billing constructs to see, you know, where are my rough edges? Where are my cost wastage points? And then only start thinking about how do I optimize this? Now, the great thing about AWS and cloud providers in general is there is an inherent elasticity. I have the ability to scale up, I can scale down, I can change things with like a simple API call. So for most customers, this isn't a glaring red flag. It's not a huge problem. It's get into the cloud, then do a right sizing investigation, and then change things. What this tends to delay, however, is a bigger cost benefit where, you know, you could be buying things or signing contracts that provide you an even greater discount on your underlying AWS service costs, but you don't want to take that step because you're still exploring, have I selected the right size database instance? Have I selected the right size EC2 instance? So it's what happens is it drags out this cost optimization journey in most cases up to about 6 months. Where if we started the entire cost optimization journey right in the beginning with our initial planning, if we did it with the discussions with security teams talking about how do I make sure I'm building something secure, we could probably shrink that time frame. And I would actually go as far as to say for customers who are in a hybrid context where they're not moving everything to AWS overnight like BuzzFeed did, which is most people, you could end up with optimizations on both sides of the fence that are really impactful to the business. And I think there's a lot there. So I don't know if you want to rabbit hole into any element of that specifically.
Well, I want to add kind of an addendum to everything that you said that kind of packs it all together, because I want to talk to our audience here for just a second, because you may be in an organization that's already been in the cloud for years and years, right? But almost every large organization has a subset or a large portion of their application services and storage on premises still. And most of those kinds of organizations never really, you know, it takes a lot of time to do the research project to figure out what those things are. So don't think of this as like a net new migration either. This could be for those future migration projects and as you're looking at it, because if you just think, hey, we just want to go ahead and get these things in the cloud, it's the same kind of a lift and shift mentality as if you were starting net new and just going to go ahead and push the button. Now, the other thing I want to say is that when we're talking to a FinOps audience, right, there's a lot of folks out there that are like, hey, you know and understand that there's a lot of efficiencies that come with cloud, and many people that I talk to that are in the industry think that organizations think they'll save money when they go to the cloud. But Ryan touched on this, right? Cost is an afterthought to them, and they're not as concerned with saving money in the short term as they are with that elasticity that Ryan addressed, with innovation, right, with the ease of deployment. What they want is the ability to respond to market needs faster, the ability to have that elasticity and grow with demand faster and easier, as well as reduce the maintenance burden of, you know, everything they have in data centers. And along with all of that, as Ryan talked about, right, and again, I'm just talking about this broader story, for those of you that, like, again, like when we're in the weeds day to day in our jobs and we're in these cloud programs, we don't understand this sometimes from like the executive's perspective. They really do look at this as like, hey, we're going to do all this now. We think or know that we can just, we'll assume that we're going to save money in the future by reducing these burdens and scaling, or at least scale efficiencies. But again, getting back into the weeds that you all are in for most of our audience, right? You know, that doesn't always happen. It doesn't happen. It does, you know, scalability isn't just a thing that happens with the cloud all the time, as everybody knows, right? As well as like, there's no guarantee that you're just going to save money. So Ryan, I'm going to flip it back to you. Talk to us again. Let's talk more about those details, right? So like, as we're planning that migration, we're making the assumption of those cost efficiencies in the future, and then we start taking the steps to those deployments, right? So we've lifted and shifted some things. Do you see that, like, do organizations quickly catch on that they're going to have to do a better job of organizing these things and slow down to plan? Or do you feel like they kind of see as, hey, the project's already started, we're just going to keep doing as we're doing? Or is there's kind of a mix there?
Well, I would like to, for the most part, the vast majority of customers know that they're going to go through a cost optimization phase. There's just a delay to it. They've got other priorities, and they'll get to it a little bit later. And what I mean by a little bit later, it's usually if you're in a project where you're migrating things, it's within the first 3 months of that workload being on AWS, which in a FinOps context sounds like forever. Then there is a customer, and these are the smaller subset, they don't think of this at all. It becomes a horrific realization when they get their first bill and they're like, oh, wow, I wasn't expecting that bigger number. Panic sets in, chaos ensues, some resort to blame storming, And for that tiny demographic, it's a very shock and awe. Have I made the right decision? And for some of those customers, it turns into, is this a third-party ISV software that is now incredibly expensive? And the knee jerk is, right, how do I get rid of this? How do I throw away 30 years of investment in this product because it's so expensive and go to something that I'm unfamiliar with, but I think it's cheaper? Or people flip it over and say, oh my gosh, cloud is just so insanely expensive. Why did I come here? And in both of those cases, I'd say neither of those is true. So what we see is let's talk about customers who are migrating and doing this retroactively. They move their workloads into the cloud. Most don't wait for their first bill. They don't wait until the end of the month to get the finalized bill. What most customers do is they very quickly turn on some sort of cost tracking mechanism in AWS, and they're tracking this expenditure in a daily capacity. So they're looking in those first few days, what does my billing look like? And what does my resource utilization look like? So they're utilizing AWS tools like a Cost Explorer. They're utilizing tools such as, you know, AWS CloudWatch, where you're getting metrics and telemetry from the things that you're running, and you're seeing your utilization. And very quickly you can see, hang on, I've potentially oversized this. Many customers take what they have on premises, and because it doesn't have the same kind of elasticity, it's built for what my peak utilization is, not for what my minimalistic utilization is. So when they bring that as is to AWS, it's ridiculously oversized. And they don't take into account that they've taken some of those building blocks out and they've maybe adopted an AWS service to replace it. So most customers end up with a oversized implementation that can be shrunk down within the first couple of days. And if you're monitoring your expenditure and you're monitoring your utilization, you can shrink that down. But this happens in post-migration. What's starting to shift now is customers are starting to say, you know, I've had a journey through, say, a pandemic. I maybe had to close down a whole bunch of theme parks, or I was in the entertainment industry where we didn't do business there. Maybe I'm an airline where business was poor during that time frame and I lost revenue in that time frame. Now we're 2 years later, but those companies are still thinking about, how do I recoup those costs? How do I do any new work in a cost-efficient way? Cost efficiencies have become much more important to customers, right up there with security if you look at the latest IDC trends.
I would definitely, and I've seen that, and it's amazing, right? Because of the other number I throw out there is that with the same kind of analysts like Forrester, Gartner, IDC, the estimation they're pretty much across the board that everybody gives is about, they think that about 30% of their cloud spend is waste, which is, you know, the whole reason the FinOps Foundation is, I mean, it's exploding right now. When I first heard of the FinOps Foundation, they had a few thousand members. I've heard that, I just heard today they went over 22,000, I think is the number right now, and they're still growing at a lightning fast pace. I want to ask you, right? So one of the number one challenges that if you go to data.finops.org, the FinOps Foundation does an annual survey. And one of the biggest challenges that they give year after year has been getting engineers to take action on the kind of right sizing that you just mentioned. What have you seen in terms of, like, as organizations are just getting started in the cloud or building a whole subset of new resources in the AWS, for instance, what have you seen organizations do, and what have you recommended that organizations do to kind of operationalize that right sizing from the engineering side and getting engineers to take task to, like, kind of re-architect some of the things that may be more difficult to right size?
So I think the first thing we need to acknowledge is this is not an AWS challenge. This is, even for the customers that I'm serving in a migration capacity, they're large scale hybrid entities. They're trying to solve the cost optimization problem moving to AWS, but at the same time, where they're coming from, in many cases, which is on premises. And there's an opportunity to kill two birds with one stone here. We start assessing the cost footprint too late. We need to shift that forward. And one of the things that we're starting to see is the better incorporation of tools and technology as part of that observability mentality. So we're starting to see customers adopt a variety of things. And strangely enough, most of them fall into the IBM portfolio right now. Apptio's cloudability is definitely one of them. Something where I can hook into the products and services I'm running on AWS, something that I can hook into products and services on premises, and give me a perspective of what is costs, being able to report on the aggregates of costs. More importantly, being able to extrapolate where those costs are going, what they might look like in the future. Then there's another layer which gets us a little bit closer to your question about actioning that, and that is, what can I do to get visibility of resource utilization and where am I wasting things because I've just got more than I practically need? And we're starting to see customers utilize AWS for some of that, things like AWS CloudWatch metrics to see what's your utilization. But more and more, we're seeing customers adopt a third-party type solution that is going to integrate and complement what is coming from something like Cloudability. In my case, I see a lot of IBM's Turbonomic being combined with that. So you've got something that is very, very clever at what the resource utilization is, but it has a layer of automation that can be utilized. So what we're seeing now is for non-critical, non-production workloads, especially where there's a lot of exploration, where customers have a playtime where they're not sure what this is going to cost, but they don't want to hinder that playtime. You've got things like Cloudability and Turbonomic in there. And the automation that comes from the combination of those two means that infrastructure teams don't have to take the insights and then go and implement that. They can have the tools automatically do it for them in a non-production context where it's safe to explore. And if those are favorable outcomes, they can then manually implement those similar changes into their production workloads. Now, the funny thing is most customers I work with save money, but don't sort of put it into the piggy bank. They reinvest that back into their non-prod, back into their production exploration. There is a reinvestment in innovation that provides future benefits of cost savings in my business holistically. So you'll see, I think the numbers are, you know, if you shave 30% off of a customer's costs, they're going to just churn that 30% saving back into their exploration of what do I innovate with next on AWS. The other question that you had was, you know, related to actioning things. If you have these tools in place before a migration project starts, you start assessing the cost footprint of that in its existing state, in its existing place. So you start to get a perspective of what is my waste, what are my optimizations I could be doing for on-premises. It informs how big is the workload, what is that workload going to cost, what are some of the things I can optimize when I move to AWS. But you get insight on both sides of the fence, and that is much more impactful because now you can literally optimize your entire business. You're not just dependent on how do I get this migration done and optimize that small piece of the puzzle.
So, and to summarize a bit, right, and again, Ryan is with, you know, the IBM side of what he's doing for partners with AWS. Yeah. So we're not just pitching, you know, Apptio and IBM product here. This is what he's seeing and using every day. So there are alternatives out there. We try to keep things a little agnostic here. I do want to throw that out there. No. But
so absolutely. I think the big thing here is ignore the tools for a moment. Think about the process. We need something that gives us observability of costs. We need something that gives us observability of underlying resource utilization, because those give us two different perspectives of the same challenge. And then some mechanism to automate the implementation of that. Whether you're going to script that, or whether you're going to hire minions to action it, or whether you're going to, you know, there are many ways to skin a cat here. These are the things that I see more frequently. That's why I mentioned that.
And that's great. And I'm glad that you did. And I also think, too, that this, what you talked about bringing FinOps and cost considerations deeper into the engineering side of the house, right? I think that that is so, so, so important. And something that we don't see a lot of and don't hear a lot of is having, you know, cost considerations in your like test environment, right? Actually testing resources for cost optimization as a use case, right? From the test side, I think that's really, really great. That way, again, you're not worried about production. And I don't think anybody would just go ahead and like right size a resource in production, but I do think that I haven't heard this talked about by FinOps practitioners and the engineers that I've spoken with in a way that suggests that they are even tinkering or playing around, because they play with use cases and they try to, you know, they determine things and they plan things out. And you don't see that happening with cost included from kind of that testing and ideation phase, right?
You'll often see it with database administrators, where they'll get a recommendation to change the performance characteristics of a database. They'll test that non-prod. If it's favorable, they'll bring that across into production. That's a very common mindset, but it's more often than not approached from a performance improvement than a cost optimization. And I'm of the opinion that cost optimization is yet another leg of performance improvement. As you improve performance, you're going to have an impact on cost one way or the other. And that cost pillar should be side by side and should not be ignored as part of that quest for performance.
Do you have any recommendations for incentivizing this for like engineers and from like the OCM side of the house that you've seen as organizations are implementing all of this?
Well, do you want the cynical answer or the light shiny?
Give me both, man. Give me the cynical and then let's put some lipstick on it, right?
Okay. So Amazon has the concept of a well-architected framework.
Yes.
And when we started with that well-architected framework, you know, in its early days of 2013, 2014, we focused on things such as, you know, how do you architect for resilience? How do you architect for scale? How do you architect for elasticity? Security was in there. And that is the old school mindset of how do I cater for my customers and things? And you'll notice that cost wasn't in there. It was an afterthought. Nowadays, cost has become a very real pillar of the well-architected framework. You cannot architect something well if you are not taking in costs. So if you're looking for a very easy motivation for why to do this, it fundamentally is part of architecting anything well. And I mean anything, not just AWS. You're going to redo your home. You're going to renovate your kitchen. You can apply the well-architected framework there. So what we're seeing is more and more customers are looking at this, not just from top down. It is becoming an entrenched mindset in all aspects of the business. And I think the infrastructure side of things is easy to predict. It's easy to have a look at. It becomes a lot more fun if you are a customer going through a app modernization process and you've got thousands of applications and 30 years of legacy technical debt, and you need hands on keyboard to refactor those workloads. And now you're going to bring in potentially more developers, or you're going to bring in a consulting company. And the idea of how many human beings do I need to action this workload, and what is the cost of that? That's a little bit more difficult to predict. And there's very few companies in the market right now that have a good product that says, how do I assess the human resources cost of a project? AWS doesn't have that right now. We can very accurately predict things such as, you know, what's your database going to cost you if it's this sort of size? How many DBAs you need to interact with that, and what they're going to cost you is a mathematical calculation on a napkin somewhere else in a boardroom.
Right. You know,
there isn't a tool for that. The cynical side of things is there are many companies across the globe right now that are right or wrong perceiving the market to be in a contracting state. There is a growing concern that, you know, I only have so much money, and I want to use that money in the wisest way possible. So not being penny wise and pound foolish, how do I identify areas of improvement that will allow me to retain my talent, that will allow me to still action the new projects that I want and attract new future talent, but not be wasteful that I'm throwing away the baby with the bathwater. So there is a tremendous amount of scrutiny around everything that is costs. How do I get people back into an office and do that in an efficient way? How do I launch that new product? Is this the product I want to invest in? Is now the right time to migrate this workload, or do I leave it alone? How does this cost footprint fit into my overall business risk portfolio? And you're going to see every single customer you talk to today is going to have a very real discussion very early on around what decision do I need to make? What step do I take that's going to give me the best bang for buck? And what do I need to know in order to take that step? And I think there's a tremendous amount of unsurety in the industry abroad. There's a lack of the.
Yeah, no. And I think that this is another thing that we actually like just talked about this in the last episode about how, you know, the FinOps Foundation does address this some too. But like when we're in that FinOps mentality and we're going for that, those coverage levels, we're trying to tweak every last drop that we can efficiencies out of commitment spends, you know, we're buying on the spot market. And then also doing all this right sizing. One of the difficulties organizations have is like the FinOps and the cloud team communicating the savings that they're delivering back to the organization so that they understand the efficiencies that are being brought from the work that's being done, because it is it's a lot of work and they need to be able to take credit and get the visibility for that. And also do that in a way that's budget conscious, because if you just say, hey, this is the cost, but that cost incorporates savings, they're just seeing the amortized cost, then like that can really have a negative impact on budget if there's any changes at all in either direction, really. So being able to communicate that out and articulate the cost reduction / savings that you're getting as an organization or the cloud organization back to the wider org is really important too.
You also got the challenge of, and you kind of touched on it with engineering teams will implement something on AWS that will save them a huge chunk of cash later on. But that initial step is expensive. And if you're not reporting back things, the knee-jerk initial perspective is this is much more expensive than I expected it to be. And you're not getting to that future cost benefit. Something simple like adopting a different kind of storage on AWS. You take a customer that's moving workloads into S3, they could be saving 60% of their storage costs, depending on their use case and then how they use the product. That is a non-trivial saving, but to get the benefit of that, you kind of need to move all of your storage into that location first. So you're paying for the cost of transferring data, which on face value is a wasteful expense, but then 2 months later, you're potentially reaping that 60% cost benefit. It offsets it. And too few customers have a good telemetry and reporting system where they can say, we spent X, but we're yielding Y, and Y is so much cooler than X. It's aggravated by app modernization. You know, I'm refactoring 30 years worth of application code and doing things differently. How do I show the value of that in a financial context? That's really difficult. I don't have a good answer for that one, but there are many customers that are exploring how do they better show the TCO that they're getting from the decisions that they've made. And I think we're seeing a growing mindset and a growing tool repertoire to cater for that mindset.
Well, and I think so much too, especially when we're talking about like migrations and refactoring and all of that, about like feature deduplication, not just deduplication of like resources or specific like allocated tasks, right, or workloads that are fulfilling a specific goal, but also just, you know, understanding, for instance, a SaaS product that has like a ton of different use cases that it covers, ensuring that you're not investing in duplicated functionality on that end, but also if you're developing your own applications in the cloud, making sure that you can develop that with the security parameters and the customization that you need, so that maybe if it's a application that, you know, you just spin up a copied database with an extra table or two and change a name or two, you can use it for, you know, a bunch of different parts of your organization. There's that kind of application rationalization that needs to be part of that process as well, right?
I think we're in desperate need of a bit of summary here, because we're talking about a lot of intertwined concepts. And I think if I had to bring it home, if you're not already considering costs as part of every step of your business, I would seriously start looking at some sort of organizational change management that brings cost as a fundamental pillar of your architectural process, of your well-architected pursuit. If you're pursuing security, if you're pursuing performance, if you're pursuing reliability, you should be pursuing cost. And I don't mean fixate on it like the Spanish Inquisition and everything should be the cheapest it can be. It's at the beginning, just have a visibility of what are your costs, where are your heat maps, what is costing you the most, and relate that to resource utilization. So visibility of cost and performance side by side is something I think we should be striving for. The decisions you make, the actions you take based on that, I feel can come later, because once you've got insight, you can then take a deep breath, calm down, and in a very collected way say, where am I going to invest, where it's going to make the most impact? Fix those things first. So don't become penny wise and pound foolish. The other element is don't, and this is for every customer I work with, but they predominantly are hybrid customers. Don't think of cost optimizations just being something that you're going to do for your future innovation. There is a lot of your empire that is not going to change in the short term, whether that is deprioritization because there's something else that needs to happen now, or whether there is an inherent risk with changing that. Have a look at those existing systems and what are they costing you? Maybe it changes your perspective on when you modernize those, or maybe it changes your perspective on, you know, what are finite little tweaks. And then the final thing is, once you decide that you are going to change something in your organization because you've gotten a perspective from a costing approach, I think the overwhelming number of things that you could do to change a cost footprint on AWS is daunting. If you look at all of the things, like you could change the configuration of a particular service, you could adopt a new service, you could archive some things, you can go into savings plans, RIs. If you're an enterprise support customer, you can go into an EDP program. There are incentives from any number of different software ISVs. Which of all of those do you click together is a very fun exploration for teams. And I think that is where reaching out to account teams and having a good relationship with them and understanding what the different options are and how they could apply to you and helping somebody to hold your hand through that decision-making process is probably a fundamental thing. Don't forget about the teams that support businesses, whether that is a consulting team that's working with you or a financial advisor or an AWS account team. We tend to reach out to those entities when something breaks, but really they're instrumental in the health and future of the overall organization. They have experience, they have a voice. Even if you don't adopt it, at least hear them out.
Ryan, this is great. You know, one of the things I like about the way that you just panned that out is it really, like, the FinOps framework lays right on top of this, right? You've got your inform phase where you're getting your inventory allocation. Then the optimize phase comes next because, you know, you've got that going. Once you have the visibility and the inventory, then you can start to really prioritize things to optimize and then work on that side of the house. And then the operate phase, the operationalization of all of this, which again, you pan this out in that exact same order from all the experience that you have and everything that you're seeing, like it totally lines up. And it's exactly what most folks I talk to, and again, the FinOps Foundation and its resources, the community, it's the way it's spoken about, right? And there's a good reason. And what I'm saying is that you've really kind of dove into the details of why things pan out that way from the migration perspective and the AWS perspective and what that looks like. So thank you for all of that information and the considerations, man. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time. Before we go, Ryan, do you have anything else that you want to kind of add here or conclude with, or any last piece of sage wisdom for all of us, man?
Information around costs on AWS, the way that we communicate our service pricing is a little bit all over the place. So each AWS service has its own pricing page, has its own pricing constructs. So if you are looking at pricing optimizations at an AWS service level, I would recommend getting in touch with your AWS service team and bring them into a discussion. They're going to help shove you in the right direction quicker, and you don't have to suffer through it on your own. I do encourage any customer that is looking to adopt AWS or has already adopted AWS to look at the well-architected framework. And if you've never looked at it, look at the cost pillar and ask yourself, what of that am I missing from my organization? And then, of course, it's never too late to start this. I like to think that security is day one and cost is day 1.5. So, you know, jump in with both feet and start that exploration and let us help you on that journey.
All right, man. That's awesome. I really appreciate it, Ryan. Thanks again so much. And we'll see everybody next time. All right, so now we are entering our mailbag portion of the podcast here, and today we have Phil Purcell with us. Phil, thanks so much for joining us. Phil is a senior FinOps consultant here at Apptio. Phil has been around doing FinOps before FinOps was FinOps, and before he came here, he's been doing cloud cost management for close to 12 years now, and was actually in some of the earliest meetings of the FinOps Foundation we were just talking about, and part of it kind of has things got rolling with it. So, Phil, again, really great to have you here. Got a couple of questions for you, and I thought you'd be just the perfect expert to answer them for us.
Glad to be here, Hunter. Fire away.
All right. Thanks, man. So the first one that we have is, what is the next area of growth that you see from FinOps, from all your experience and all the organizations that you're still talking to today and the implementations that you're doing? What do you see being the next area of growth for FinOps?
You know, Hunter, I love that question because it's not necessarily a product. It's not necessarily a service. The area of growth that I really see coming around the corner for FinOps is creating more of a business sense around FinOps, making it part of the industry itself. We saw this already through places like Agile, right? DevOps. We've seen these things have to integrate over time. They start within a very specific part of the business. But FinOps is not just a project. FinOps is not just a team. FinOps is something we all have a little bit of touch into it. We just have a few different parts of the process that we handle. And so I think the next area of growth for FinOps is really going to be integrating it within the business to the point where it almost becomes transparent.
Thank you. That's an awesome answer, too. I really appreciate it, man. The second question that we got is, and this is from the community, and I'm asking you this because I really like the way that you approach this, really without just saying Apptio, right? And that'd be the obvious answer to this. But the question was, what is the preferred tool for approaching FinOps? So,
yeah, obviously I'm going to approach that one with a little bit of bias. It's the tool that I used when I was a client, and there's a reason that I wanted to come over and work with Apptio. So I'm going to avoid the tooling itself, but instead the tool that I'm going to recommend for people is change management. That's a tool that we all too often overlook within the organizations. They've done this a million times over. I was referencing Agile and DevOps. These are still fresh in our minds. These are parts of methodologies that we've already had to adopt. Change management knows how to do that. They know who to talk to, and they know how to build it within the organization. If I might give just a small example, when I was a client and we were in those early days trying to figure out what this cloud management thing is, we identified champions within each of our lines of business that were going to work as cloud champions already. And they were helping to spread the gospel of what is the hyperscaler we're working with, what are the services and regions, and what are we allowed to use? They became a central point for those questions and kind of had a council amongst themselves to talk that out and understand both what was the business approach to that, but also their line of business, what was the best way to approach that, and then they could feed that through the organization. I recommend a very similar approach within FinOps, where you can leverage those same champions that are already your household names within the organization. They already understand a lot of that change management process, how to communicate amongst each other, and a lot of the nuance that comes with what is the overall business's approach and what is our approach.
Man, that is, again, just an awesome way to think about that and to approach it. We talk so much, you know, everybody that I've talked to that's, you know, hip deep in FinOps, so to say, just collaboration and how you approach the organization with, you know, the specific structures, the different personas and personalities that you have to deal with. It's different everywhere you go. And I think that that really hits home on so much of what FinOps is and how you need to approach it. Because if you can't get people to work well together and accept the changes that have to happen in order to be efficient, then, you know, all of the tooling and all of the frameworks and all the learning that you do is, for lack of a better way to say it, just purely academic. So I think that there's a lot of wisdom in that response.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Hunter, the last thing that I'll just close on with that, man, is this is something that I also want organizations to understand. You are not alone, right? The entire reason the FinOps Foundation was founded, the entire reason I got involved with this practice when I did, is because we were all asking the same questions, but we were very much asking it within our little bubbles. It was the right combination of people that came together that helped us to identify, hey, I've got these two or three clients saying the same thing. Would you be interested in talking to each other? That eventually has now expanded into over 22,000 global members of the FinOps Foundation, and it's still exploding.
That is awesome. And so, you know, to that point, everybody, head on over to finops.org if you are interested in learning more about that kind of OCM approach. Listen to stories and how people have approached different relationships, different kind of organizational structures to make FinOps work for them. Very open community, very good place to go and ask questions. And if you join the community, you entered into the Slack channel where you can actually have conversations and ask questions to other people in the community. Phil, thanks again so much for your time today, man, for your wisdom and expertise. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we might be able to have you again on a different time, man.
Absolutely. I'd love to do it, Hunter. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And everybody, thank you for listening. This concludes this episode of FinOps Fridays. We'll hope you check it out again and hope to see you back.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this episode of FinOps Fridays. If you have any FinOps questions or questions about the podcast, reach out to us at FinOpsFridays@apptio.com. You can also find more information at the website there as well. We're also really active on social media. So hope that you like, subscribe to our content. And if you have any questions, you can also comment there. Hope to see you next time. Hope you have a good one. Until then.